And I promised myself that moment, I said, I will never refuse to do something solely based on fear. Mm. Now, I'll just refuse to do things based on good reasons and also fear, but I will never choose to do to not do something purely based out of fear. And I've lived my life by that ever since.
Welcome to the Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
All right, the Disruption Zone. I am Leland Conway, Cameron Mills. Courage. We're going to talk about courage today. You want to talk about courage?
Absolutely.
All right. Before we do, can I chase a rabbit trail?
Are you going to edit this out of the show, or is this going to be in the show?
This is going to be in the show.
By the way, the intro for the last show, by the way, remind me before I leave here, I want to see 12. The last show.
It was awesome.
If y'all haven't listened to it, and here's what happened. Let's chase this.
We love our last show. You should go listen to our last show.
We do. Because number one, we talked about something that is, whether we're a racist country or not,
yeah,
this topic matters whether you are indifferent towards it.
Yep,
or whether it you are irritated by,
yeah,
you know, believing that it is, maybe it is, maybe, I mean, that was what we were exploring.
Yeah.
And I think you and I even talked about, like, I wonder how many people who are just, they're worn out,
yeah,
with that title, racism, yep. Yep. Race, that they just, and then there are some people that are still, they're beating the pavement with it.
But I'm not sure that episode was as much about race as it was about understanding each other. Which is different.
If that's the case, then we might want to retitle that one.
Yeah.
I feel like some people just see that phrase and they're like, I'm worn out with this.
Yeah.
And there are other people who, because what that is, you're exactly right. That's what we did, is we wound up talking to someone who, and I think I said this at the beginning, with a different culture and a different, grew up differently.
Right.
And he just asked questions.
Yeah.
Don't be afraid to, okay, explain this, explain that. And that's what got you and he, I think, connected and bonding, yep, really, is that you had, because you told the story about the rap and how degrading it was to women. And then he kind of advised, well, go see if you can find that somewhere else, too.
Right. So. And then kind of took us down that trail to,
yeah,
you know, what the corporate interests are in dividing us and all that. It's fascinating. So go, yeah, listen to that.
Yeah.
Do you text to talk? Do you talk to text?
I am ashamed to say I have not quite learned to adopt that technology.
Okay, because then you may not understand what I'm getting at here. But I
can probably imagine.
I noticed something today. This has nothing to do with the topic for our episode.
Oh, good.
But I noticed something today. I noticed because I use talk to text religiously. I'm driving. I don't want to text and drive.
Right.
And so I'll turn it on. And I noticed that whatever emotions I'm feeling in the text, I try to put in the text. And I was like, wait a minute. Today I realized, like, there was somebody that I was kind of mad at that I was texting.
Okay.
And I'm like, you need to do the. And then I'm like, I get done and I'm like, they didn't hear that tone.
Right. Okay.
So I'm like, I put all that effort and energy into, yeah, this tone in the text. Cause I do that with my wife too. Like, okay. Hey, Schmoopy, I love you so much. You know, and she doesn't hear that. It just says, I love you. Like, I'm like, why
she do probably hears
I Schmoopy. Wonder if anybody else out there does that.
Does Siri get Schmoopy right when you say it?
No, I don't. It's just an example, not really Schmoopy, but
I don't. I find myself, and maybe it's because I don't use it much.
Yeah.
I will do the robot voice.
Oh, do you?
What,
yeah.
I don't
it's
want.
One or the other.
Well, here's what I don't want, though.
Because I will be there at 8.
Yeah. I will do that. I want to talk. I want to enunciate clearly.
Yeah.
Because what I don't want is it to mess up and get something wrong. And then, yeah, what happens?
Yeah.
Especially if you're driving. What do you do? Oh, I got to go back and fix it. Well, now you're being dangerous.
Yeah. But when you know, like when we're talking to each other and it's like, I really want you to get this point. So I'm going to say it like this.
That's what emojis are for.
I know.
That's
I did
exactly
it.
What they're for.
I'm like, my phone doesn't get that I'm upset.
Again, all you have to, now, what I wonder if Siri can insert, if you say insert angry emoji.
That would be funny.
It may do that. Listen, I had
insert flip the bird.
On my radio show last night, I had our website designer, Joey Police.
Yeah, yeah.
He comes on about once a month during the off season. During the summer, it's every week, but does this thing called Cameron Con. So it's basically our geek fest. We
right,
geek
right,
out.
Right.
And Joey's in the comic books of Star Wars, knows nothing about, I mean, literally nothing about sports, and doesn't want to know. So you don't hurt his feelings when you say, you're just an idiot when it comes to stuff.
Yeah.
He goes, oh, yeah, I proudly am. But he was on last night, and he was talking about the Alexa thing. And
oh,
the,
yeah,
smart home thing. And what we got into was this conversation about, And he, and look, he is in cybersecurity. That's what he does. And he's like, oh no, these things are listening to you all the time. And
we
you're advising this as some sort of great geek gift for the holidays.
Yeah.
And you're saying that they're listening all the time. Oh yeah, they listen all the time, whether you opt out or not.
We need to have him on. Because that conversation, you know, just recently in the news, the Marriott, 500 million people, their passwords, their passports, passports, that's all you need to steal somebody's identity. It's gone. And this company, the data breach happened.
Why does the Marriott need your passport?
I know. The data breach was in September. And we're finding out about it now. And I'm just like, why is it that big corporations that trade on, it's worse. I think it's worse. I think it's more sinister. They trade on our information, right? We're a product now. There are some companies out there, because I used to work in a business that controlled a good amount of data. And it was a big monetary thing for us. And this was long before we had that kind of information about people. It was, we just controlled an email list.
Right.
And it was like tens of thousands of dollars of value to us. Now there are companies out there who could care less whether you actually buy something in their store. They just want to know what your habits are, because you're more valuable to them as a commodity than as a customer, right? And there's this conversation was never had in America about, is the convenience worth what we're giving up?
It's not convenience. They're not interested in convenience. They're interested
in us as humans. We will take something and give it all of our information because it's quick.
Well, no, No. I don't think we give it to them because they ask for it.
Yes, but
and rarely do we have the I've started doing it, and I feel rude every time I'm doing it. When someone asks for my phone number,
I don't give that out.
No,
I don't feel rude.
I just want to say, you don't need that.
Yeah.
And then if it's a new employee, they'll hesitate because they've been told to get it.
Yeah.
They've not been told you have to.
Oh, I gotta get snarky with me about my email.
That's my point. I'm like, no, you don't need that.
Yeah. I'm like, it's none of your business.
And I feel like I'm being rude every time. By the way, I'm gonna say this might be the best podcast on courage that's ever been done.
We haven't even touched it yet.
That's my point. Because
you were being courageous enough to tell them you can't have my phone number, even though I don't know who you are and I'll never see you again.
You said you wanted to chase a rabbit's tail, and then I started doing that, and then you're back on yours.
We need to have that conversation about
privacy, though.
And
we need to have it with Joey would be good.
Because the whole Alexa thing is convenience. That's what it is. I can go, hey, Alexa, order me some toilet paper while I'm sitting on the bowl. You know what I mean? I mean, it's like, why do we need that? Why do we not think to just get some last time we were at Kroger?
Because we think convenience is going to save the world.
I know.
And I'm just as guilty, by the way. I said that with a little judgment in my heart. I'm just as guilty.
Yes.
You know, but at the same time, it's one of those things where we're getting lazy.
I hate the excuse.
I find myself asking other people to do things for me because I know my phone. If my phone can't do it, someone else will do it for me.
Right.
I'm like, I don't want to be that person.
I hate the excuse, if you're not doing anything wrong, you don't have anything to worry about. Because 5 to 10 years from now, lot of things are going to be wrong that aren't wrong today.
Well, I'll tell you this. It's interesting you say that because, again, not to over pub my radio show.
You can pub it all you want.
All right, Cameron Mills Radio, Sunday nights, many stations all over in the all over the state.
Thanks, straight.
Anyway,
I got one too. 840 WHAS.
Yeah, see, yours is easy though. You just give the. That's the problem with having some affiliates and not having as popular a show as you. You're on one station and you've got so many listeners. I'm on like 11.
Yeah,
I
turn off the mic. Nobody knows who I am. You walk out to a restaurant, people are like, "The shot."
Okay, see, you say that like it's a good thing, and I'm not going to lie. It has helped me in my life a great deal. But there is a downside to that. I had some very good friends recently. Again, such a great courage conversation. I had some friends last year. Basically, this person and I had very honest conversations. And basically say, I said, you know, they were doing something new in their life. I said, what do you want to do this for? I want to be famous.
Right.
And I thought, ooh.
Yeah, I don't think you do.
I don't think you do. And sure enough, six months later, we're talking again. I said, so do you feel that way? She goes, no.
It is weird because I have people come up to me at restaurants and I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
I don't want anybody to get the idea that I want to discourage it because it reminds me that what I'm doing is resonating with people.
Well, okay, I will accept that as a deep answer, but I'm going to tell you, you like it.
I also like it because absolutely. Totally. No, I'm not trying to hide that. No, I like being the center of attention.
Absolutely.
If somebody wants to come up and say, dude, I love your show, I love that. It affirms my ego. But there is also a moment every time it happens, because so far nobody's ever come up and said, are you Leland Conway? I hate you.
Yeah, that's
coming. Not yet, because I get that in the email. Right. But
well, and isn't it interesting that you get in the email – And it's one of the reasons that we can't communicate.
Yes.
Well, we're on so many topics right now. I love this. One of the reasons we can't communicate as adults anymore, because we find ourselves on social media.
Yes.
Being someone, it is truly how we feel.
Right.
But we lose all of our tact.
Yep.
And we don't know how to communicate now and share a disagreement.
Right.
As an adult, because we're used to yelling at people on social media.
Yeah.
And so people won't come up to you, but they should be able to come up to you and say, I was listening the other day, and I really disagree with you on this one topic. And let me tell you why. Because you would listen to that.
Oh, yeah.
What you won't listen to is when that guy attacked McConnell.
Right.
And McConnell had no reason to listen to that mess. I don't care what the guy was saying. If you're going to approach someone with that sort of anger and that sort of vitriol, I'm sorry, you're tuned out.
But that's not I don't think those groups that are doing that, I don't think that's a lot of people. I think
– No, it's not.
I think in my business, talk radio –
you ask for it when you're in talk radio anyway.
No, but I think that there are people in my line of business that do what I do that would like you to think that group of people is bigger than it is.
Well, sure.
I think that it's rare that anybody wants to. I mean, even you saw in that restaurant with McConnell, you saw people in that restaurant that came forward later and said, we defended him. And by the way, I'd agreed with the protesters politically, but I disagreed with what they were doing to him as a human
and
being.
See, I'm thrilled that those people are out there.
Absolutely.
And that makes me feel better about the country.
Yeah.
As opposed to someone doing that makes me feel worse about
it.
If someone's going to encroach on someone's, again, family time, private time.
Right.
And you know, you can say, so, well, these guys, you know, if you run for office, you lose the privilege of having public or private time. No, you don't. Neither do celebrities.
That's like saying you get hired for a job and now you lose the privilege to not have your boss in the middle of the bed with you at night when you get home. I mean, it's like you get to go home. You get to turn it off.
You get
to not answer work emails for a little while.
Well, especially if you have have a good boss.
Yeah.
I was talking to someone earlier today about a speaking engagement I've got coming up, and it's for a company. It's a corporate event. And they were like, you know, we value. They're telling me about the company. It's a construction company in Tompkinsville, and they're telling me about the value they place upon. They do construction all over the eastern part of the country, and they want their families, they want their crew home on the weekends,
right?
Because they want them spending time with their family.
Courage.
Oh, okay. That sounds like
a great
conversation.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know why I wanted to have this conversation. I think it follows on the conversation we had about coaching versus criticism.
It certainly does on some level.
Yeah. Because it takes courage to recognize that somebody has told you something that is correct, even if it hurt when they told it to
you. Don't you think, the more I think about it, and I'm glad you said that first, don't you think that takes the most courage?
I think it does.
Anything to admit when you're wrong?
Yeah, I mean, the times that I've been wrong in my life have been the hardest times when I've come to the grips with the fact that I was.
Because it hurts you internally. Mm-hmm. You hurt yourself when you come to that conclusion.
Yeah.
And admitting to someone else that you've stood up to, that you've had back and forths with, or someone who has dared to tell you that you are incorrect in something, and maybe they did it incorrectly or publicly, but for you to be able to come to that conclusion and say, you know what, how they did it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
How they said it doesn't matter. I've got to own this. That hurts, but I don't know if you find this in your life, but the people who are willing to do that, I wound up having more respect for them than if they had ever been wrong, right in the first place.
Doesn't – when we hurt other people, like maybe this is TMI, but I'll say it.
All right.
Every night when I say my prayers, I ask the Lord to
– Now I laid me down to sleep.
No, I ask him, forgive me for the people that I have hurt and heal them.
Oh, I like that part better.
Because – There's people I can't go back. I don't know I hurt them.
You would struggle in AA.
Or there's people I go back. If I do, you're pulling a scab off that's not healthy.
Yeah.
So I pray that prayer. But and there's times I just haven't realized it. But when we hurt people,
don't you wanna know?
Isn't that an act of cowardice?
If we do it intentionally, yes.
Well,
because I think sometimes, like you just said, sometimes you don't know.
Right.
Like, for example, I tend to be a smart aleck, and I tend to do it with strangers.
Right.
I can't control it. I have a filter. I have a very strong filter. If people knew what was in my head sometimes and doesn't come out, they and I think we're all like that on some level. But I do think sometimes that people just think, well, he's just an ass.
Right.
Well, I don't mean to be, and I don't want to be. It's just my sense of humor. It's dark. It's demented. It's just – but if I do it intentionally, and I think sometimes we play this fine line of not realizing what we're saying is hurtful, even though, because, and this gets very psychological. And this is one of the reasons I wanted to major in psychology, because I am fascinated by the subconscious and the things we do out of protection that will hurt other people that we don't realize we're doing it, but we are doing it for a motive. We have an internal motive, but we don't know it.
That's what I mean. Like, okay, my wife and I rarely ever fight.
I've noticed this, and I love that about you all.
But when we get into it, a lot of times I'll find out about halfway down the road that I'm wrong and she's right most of the time. But see, I got this thing.
She's not going to listen.
But pride takes over. Pride takes over, and then I'll say things that are hurtful as a defense mechanism.
Right.
That is cowardice. Now,
yes,
I agree. When I say it, I don't mean to put a dagger in her heart. That's not what I'm intending to do. But I'm afraid of what happens if I stop and go,
okay, wait,
I was wrong. So in my fear,
ooh, I like this.
I do something really mean.
But what are you? But you do intend to put a dagger in her heart. Then.
No,
you intend. Okay,
I intend to deflect.
Okay, fine. But
and in
you,
so doing,
but you do it with a sword.
Yes.
Well,
but I think that's the point I'm making.
You're not doing it with a shield. You're doing it with a dagger.
Right. That's. But that's.
Let me deflect.
That's the point I'm making, though, is that a lot
let me
of times
this bullet with a dagger. It doesn't work that way.
But that's the point I'm making, is a lot of times we hurt people.
Yeah.
It's really, we didn't set out, I didn't set out in that moment to be like, I'm going to get in a conversation with my wife and I'm going to destroy her self-esteem.
No.
I didn't set out for that, but I got into a situation where my cowardice brought me to that point, and my subconscious, brought me to that point where I said something hurtful, and now I got more damage to undo.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, but I will tell you this. You do have more damage to undo, but you can undo it all so quickly with a contrite apology.
Yes.
And I think that's something that, because I'm not saying it's easy. I have had moments where, I remember my father one time. My father he's a quiet person.
Yeah.
He's not an extrovert. Mm. I got diagnosed is the wrong word. I got labeled one time. How about that? I got labeled as an extroverted introvert, meaning that I would rather be by myself, but for my job and for what I do as a career, and it's not that I don't enjoy it. I'm forced to be out. I'm forced to be public. I'm forced to be talking, to be interacting. But I'm so much more comfortable with my mouth shut in my bedroom just watching documentaries.
Yeah.
And my dad is not like that. My dad is very much, you know, he is quiet, and he, you know, you don't know what he's thinking.
Right.
Ever.
Huh.
And as a result of that, I can remember maybe once or twice when my father came and apologized to me for something. It didn't happen often, but when it happened, I wound up having more respect for my dad.
Right.
And feeling closer to him in that moment of and I don't think he hurt me, but basically I forget what they were, but I remember the apologies. And I remember one time I'm walking down the hallway to my room after he and I had just gotten into it, and we rarely get into it. He had just come down and he came in, he knocked on the door, he said, "Can I talk to you?" And I could tell immediately he was a sheep. You know, he was contrite. There was a softness about him that wasn't there 15 minutes earlier. And he came in and apologized. And like I said, I didn't grow up with a father that always apologized. I didn't grow up with a father that needed to apologize for much.
Yeah.
But he came in, apologized, and I remember feeling closer to him in that moment.
Yeah.
Than I did before we ever fought in the first place. And what I'm saying is there is an opportunity, back to the courage thing, it not only takes courage to see that you're wrong, but it takes even another layer of courage to go back on that person, to that person face to face.
And say, "I'm sorry."
Because the easy thing to do is say, they know I'm sorry.
Yeah.
You know, if you just let it go and just say, okay, they know I'm sorry. They know I did, because I'm treating them better now. No. It's hard to do, but it makes all the difference in the world to go back to that person and say, "Hey, you know, the other day we were talking about this, and I said this, and you said it. You were right.
Well,
I was so wrong."
I think it's a matter of the difference between, are they treating me right now because they're afraid to make me mad, or did they go on record saying they were wrong, and they're treating me right now because they knew they were wrong?
Yeah.
I think that matters. So that's kind of like personal courage.
Yeah.
I think we can divide this conversation into four parts: personal courage, spiritual courage, professional courage, and political courage.
Wow, you've actually done some thinking
about
this a little bit.
Okay,
good.
So that's personal courage. Is like, you know, when when we hurt each other interpersonally,
yep,
and it takes a lot of courage to admit you're wrong and go back and apologize. Spiritual courage. You've been a minister for a long time.
Uh-huh. I'd say in ministry.
Spiritual courage is like, I mean, how do I roll this ball out? You and I are both Christians in a very secular business.
Sure.
The media.
Yeah.
I've got a big lack of courage in this area. Like, I'm just trying to be honest with you.
Then,
it's like, this is.
Do you?
In some ways, yeah.
Okay.
In some ways, I mean, it's like
I like if we're talking about, because if we're talking about courage spiritually, then I guess what we're really talking about is, are we correct? Do we believe what we believe? And are we a? And obviously, we do.
Yeah.
Both of us, both you and I, we you know, this is not a fraud. This is a very real thing to us. We don't call ourselves Christians because we go to church on Sunday mornings.
Right.
But the question is, do we have the guts to share it?
Yeah, that's hard, man.
Oh, of course it is. And listen, I've been in ministry 20 years, full-time ministry 20 years. I've gone into thousands, literally thousands of churches in the last 20 years and shared my faith. That doesn't take courage.
Because that's a receptive audience.
Exactly.
When you walk up to
somebody. It's not easy.
Yeah.
I remember one time I was down in Bowling Green at the mall, and a church set it up to basically have me share my faith in the middle of the mall to people just walking by. And I'm like, I don't like this because it's not an attentive audience. And then I realized, right, I don't like this because it's not a friendly audience.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'll tell you, the biggest courage of all, the most guts it takes in sharing your faith is two things, I think. Number one is one-on-one.
Yeah.
I am so much more comfortable sharing my faith to 1,000 people than I am to one.
Yeah.
That is so much easier.
Scariest conversation I ever had with somebody was, and this is a story of personal failure in a way, but I can remember I was sitting at the corner of, it would have been Nicholasville Road and Joseph Beth there.
There was a guy
with a panhandling. Uh-huh. And I was sitting at the red light, and I said to myself, but to him basically, I said, you're going to take that money and you're going to go over there to that gas station and you're going to buy booze.
You literally said that?
Said that to myself.
To yourself, gotcha. Okay.
So I judged him.
Fair enough, yeah.
And then I went into the store and I came back out and I had to go get gas. So I went in and I paid for my gas. And guess who was in there buying tequila? That guy.
Your wife.
So I walk out and I'm feeling my oats, man. I'm like, man,
I am so right about that guy.
And I was watching people in Mercedes handing him bills. Right. And I'm like, those people are throwing their money away.
Yeah.
So I drive away and I'm headed out Nicholasville Road. And this little voice comes in my head and it goes, you need to go back and talk to that guy. And I went, nope, I don't hear you.
No,
I don't hear you. No. And it kept going. It's like there's a McDonald's right up here on the corner.
There you go.
By the Walmart.
Yeah.
Go in there and get some food and take it back to him. And I'm like, no, I'm just imagining this. There's no conversation going on in my head. Mm-hmm. Do it. And I'm like, so I start arguing with God and I'm like, sure. All right, here's the deal, God. If he's still there.
Right. Okay. So you're throwing down fleece.
Yeah. So I go in and I buy two cheeseburger meals.
God, if the sun comes out right now and I see a rainbow.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
I will.
I'll go.
I will. But unless I see a rainbow. No.
So I stopped. I got a two cheeseburger meal and I took it back and I'm going, he's not going to be there.
We're one of the cheeseburgers for you.
No.
Okay.
He's going to be gone. I'm just going to throw this away or eat it myself or whatever. He's going to be gone.
Right.
I go back and there's that dude sitting on the grassy knoll right there in front of the gas station. I'm like, dadgummit. So I go back and I pull in and I walk over and I'm like, hey, dude.
Did you just ignore him originally?
Yeah.
Okay. Just
yeah.
Go by
I hadn't
him.
Talked,
okay.
to
yeah,
him.
Hadn't
I just,
talked to him.
I just ignored
just
him.
Judged him.
I just
like
judged
said.
Him.
Yeah,
I just judged him hard.
Okay.
And I went over and he and I'll be honest with you, he was everything I thought he was.
Yeah.
He was messed up.
I get it.
And I just said, dude, I just wanted to bring you some food. And I sat down with him.
Yeah.
And I just said,
which, by the way, right at this point now, you're going above and beyond.
Well, I felt disciplined by God.
I get it.
Because I realized that I had made a judgment call on a person. And I'm like, there ain't that much difference between me and this guy.
That is true.
There's this guy made bad decisions, and I made better decisions. I had great parents. I don't know. So I just asked him, I said, what's your story? And he told me about everything. And he went on for like 20 minutes. I said, can I pray with you before I leave? I prayed with him. I got my car and I left. And the lesson in all of this was not that I did a great thing, because
I don't hear a whole lot of personal failure in this.
No, there is personal failure.
All right.
Because I drove home and I realized that entire thing that played out was not for that guy. It was for me,
right?
Because I was such a freaking coward.
I'm going to challenge this, by the way.
Okay, no, that's fine.
Go ahead.
But that whole thing was about me and my selfishness and my judgmental spirit and the fact that I was willing to cast, you know, this, like, that guy, he's worthless. And it was like this recognition that when I were sitting on the grass together, it was almost like God was saying, you see,
yeah,
I don't see any difference between you two. Just because you get to get up and drive away doesn't mean anything.
That's what's cool about our guy.
And so I don't know.
Here's the thing.
Okay.
Because you said something I think a lot of us fall into, I'm going to relate this very oddly to the, I'm not just bringing this up to bring it up, but our national championships in 96, 98. Because what I would hear from people, because I wouldn't, and I still do it, that was a blessing from God.
Right.
Cameron, do you think with all the poverty in the world, with all the war in the world, God cares who wins the national championship? Yes, I do. Because he's God.
Right.
He's not just taking care of one thing at a time. He has the ability as God to have an interaction like you had with that gentleman. And it's not just for you. It's for you both.
Well, yes, I agree.
But that's important distinction to me because my brother right
but
now.
But the sinner, though,
which how do both I put are. This?
We both are.
No, you both. We all are, yeah.
We both were. What I'm saying is that in some ways, and I know God doesn't really differentiate between sins, but in some ways, I was the worst of the two.
Yeah, I get that.
Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely.
And that lesson, I needed to learn that lesson.
But you were the worst of the two in your eyes, which that takes courage to admit. In the real sense of the world, you're both fallen people.
Right, yeah.
And God uses that one interaction and used you in that moment to bless you both.
Right.
Not just bless you, not just bless him, bless you both. That's what mission trips are.
Mm-hmm.
You went on a little mission trip. Okay. A mission trip is one of the things I hate about when we start thinking about internally as a Christian church in America or any church that does, you know, wonderful things outside of their walls for other people. Okay. And I mean for the needy, for the Bible says the least of these. Is when we start in the Christian church, because I've been part of so many of these conversations, you need to go. You need to go to the third world. You need to go to Nicaragua. I went to Nicaragua. You need to go to Nicaragua, Nick, because it'll bless you.
I'm like, right.
Hang on. I don't, that's not why we go on mission trips to get a blessing.
Right.
You will. My brother right now is in Kenya.
Yeah, I saw that.
My brother's in the biggest slum in the world. Okay, literally. This is not, it's not like, well, it's the biggest. No, it literally is the biggest slum in the world. In Nairobi, Kenya.
Hmm.
And he's there basically for a week to help do some basketball clinics for a Christian school that's right where a dump used to be in the middle of the slum.
Wow.
And he's never done this before. And I am pinging him with questions constantly. What are you feeling? Tell me what you're feeling. Give me your emotions right now. He brought up I found this so interesting because it's what I noticed when I've been overseas and I've seen poverty. He talked about the smell, and I was like, "Yes, you get it. It you cannot describe poverty without understanding the smell of poverty,
right?
And poverty is not just financial poverty. Poverty is living less than you were meant to live. And I don't mean financially. I mean
right. Spiritually, emotionally, physically.
Yes, thank you, in every sense of the word.
Yeah.
And he's over there, and I'm like, I cannot wait. And I found myself doing this. I cannot wait till he's back. Because he's telling me, what are you feeling? He says, I feel shame. I'm overwhelmed. I'm
yeah.
Like, yes. Okay, he's in it. He has given himself over to this trip. He's going to come back a different man than he went. However, that's not why he went.
That's an interesting what you described, because that's what I felt. Shame.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in society, we shame the homeless guy in a way.
In some sense, yeah.
And yet, when I went to help him, I felt shame.
Uh-huh.
And now your brother...
Well, you felt shame before you went to help
him. Because I was a jerk.
Yeah, I get it. I listen to your story, though, and I'm sitting there like, you know, the assumptions that you made, number one, were accurate. I understand how you can see, and I'm not just trying to protect you here, because I have no need to protect you, but or to judge you unharshly. But you got it right. But to me, what's interesting about your whole story is we do that. I'm guilty of what you did. I think a lot of us are, but we never hear the conviction.
Mm-hmm.
And you use the word shame, and I've always heard, I don't know how honestly biblically accurate this is, but shame and what's the other word? There's another word that always goes with this, but, you know, are of the devil, and conviction is of God.
Mm-hmm.
What you felt, I would say, would be conviction.
Conviction, yeah.
Shame stifles you.
That's true.
Shame freezes a human being. Conviction moves.
That's a good point
forward.
Because Jesus destroyed shame wherever he found it. You and I,
but at the same time, still convicted those.
Yeah, my wife was just talking about a church service she was in a couple weeks ago when she was out of town.
Right.
The pastor was talking about the series was Encounters with Jesus, and he was talking about the woman at the well, the prostitute, or they were going to stone the prostitute. Sorry, they were going to stone the prostitute.
When he wrote on the ground.
And he wrote on the ground. Right. And the pastor pointed out, there's only two times in the Bible that God wrote with his own hand.
Okay.
Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
And whatever Jesus wrote on the ground right there. Mm. And whatever he wrote, and we don't know what he wrote. It's all speculation. Right. We don't know what he wrote. But whatever he wrote.
I love listening to the people conjecture about what he wrote.
Yeah.
To me, that's interesting. Go ahead.
Well, whatever he wrote, it brought conviction. And it blew the shame of that sinner who was about to be stoned away.
Well,
it blew away their shame.
Well, it did. But here's what, again, Ian, let's take this story to the full hilt. So you've got all the people that wanted to stone her, right? What he wrote, then the Bible says they one by one started to walk away.
Yeah.
And then he looked at her and said, "Where are your accusers?"
Yeah.
But then he also looked at her and offered her some conviction.
Right.
It wasn't just, I mean, we forget that
Nobody gets off scot-free.
That's right. We forget that part of it. Jesus didn't tell her, okay, you're innocent, go home. No, he said, go and sin no more.
Right.
What she was doing, he called sin. What those gentlemen were doing, he called sin. So I'm glad you brought this up because this brings me back to your story. What you did was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
What that guy did, you know, by being homeless and by needing, you know, he's struggling.
Drugs, alcohol. Yeah, he admitted to all of that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So he's struggling, and that would be wrong. And look, you're talking to someone who struggled with drugs, struggled with opiates in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I shouldn't do this.
Right.
But no one gets off. You said it perfectly. No one gets off scot-free.
Yeah.
And that's to me what I love about God is that he can use you in that moment, convict you, and have a lesson for you and hopefully some encouragement or a lesson for that guy as well.
So what would you say, before we move on to professional courage,
okay,
what would you say to somebody who's listening and they're like us? They're Christians in a professional and secular world about...
Having the courage to share?
Yeah, because I've seen people... Well, because there's a fine line. I mean, I've seen people you can share with people and you can push them off too.
Well,
you know, because you don't want to come off as judgmental when you're doing it. So, I mean, what advice would you give to somebody?
But part of it, too, is, okay, look, I would give this. Always just exactly what you did. If you're going to share your faith, you share why you need your faith before you share anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you do it sincerely. Because I'm not, it goes back to that old, I guess it's a poem, a saying or whatever, where I'm not a Christian because I'm perfect. I'm a Christian because I'm the opposite.
Yeah.
A perfect. That's why I need Christ, because you cannot become a Christian unless you're willing to admit you're a sinner. That comes first. You admit you're a sinner, then you can, then you know you need Christ.
Right.
You need his forgiveness. If you don't think you're a sinner, you're never going to need Christ.
Right.
So you have to admit that. So if you're going to share your faith, you have to share your weaknesses.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to do it authentically the way you just did, which was great. I mean, it's like this. Have you ever interviewed someone for a job?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think I have, but I've never hired anyone. Meaning,
right.
I've
done both.
Yeah, okay, I've not, and I've rarely gone and sat through an interview. But I've done some research on this because for my job, I've been in a situation where I've had to do some preliminary interviews of people who wanted a job with the company I work for. And one of the interview questions I found as a great, you know, icebreaker kind of yada, is what are your weaknesses, right? Okay, so I'm asking that because I want to probe in, number one, to see how honest they are. I want to see what kind of self-awareness they have and what they're going to share. That can be fascinating, interesting, and a little insight into who they are. The most common response to that question that I had, now I interviewed 10 people, and 9 out of 10 said exactly what I kind of expected, which was, what do you think your biggest weakness is? Well, a lot of people say I'm a perfectionist.
Yeah, I love that.
Like, come on.
That's so ridiculous.
That's not authentic.
Yeah.
Let's get dirty here. What you know, not you and I right now. I'm just saying, what is your, so you have to share your weaknesses. The other thing is this, is that I think one of the things we fail to see and fail to realize is we share our faith a whole lot more than we realize we do by our behaviors and how we act in the corporate world, in the secular setting.
That's what I was going to add.
Well, I didn't mean to blow it up on you.
No.
To me, that's more important.
I think
I want people to know what I believe.
Right.
I don't want to ever be accused. And I love the people who say, I forced it down my throat. I can't force anything down your throat.
I think if on balance, and I think this is important key, because I have people, I get emails from people all the time. How can you be a Christian and you say this? You know what I mean? It's like, well, because I'm imperfect.
Yeah.
You know? What? But I think if on balance, your life is profoundly different, you will get opportunities to share.
People will ask.
Because people will ask. And this, I think, ties perfectly to what you said, because I think your advice is great. Being authentic about why you need your faith. It's in those moments. Somebody says, why don't you do that? How come you don't go out with everybody and get drunk? Or how come you react differently to these situations?
Yeah.
Well, because. And then you can say, my weakness brought me to this place where this grace... You know what I'm saying? And so,
and that comes across so much more loving and careful and thought-provoking than it does you say, well, because I'm a Christian, it's just how I am. That's not really a great answer.
Yeah.
And you know what? Here's the other thing. The more you do it, the more comfortable you'll be doing it.
Yeah.
But it does take courage. I've been doing this 20 years professionally. And like I said at the beginning of this, I am more comfortable sharing Christ to 1,000 people than I am one person sitting across the table from me.
Yeah. Political courage.
It's horrifying.
Political courage.
It's the same thing as religion, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. I mean, this is a weird situation we live in America today. I mean, Donald Trump is president of the United States.
I've heard.
And in some ways, I admire him. In other ways, I detest that Donald Trump is president of the United States. Right. But this is not meant to be a political segment. But there's very few people, because I've been covering politics for a long time now, there's very few people that I would look at and say, that is a politically courageous person. Hmm. And I guess the criteria that I have for that is not that that person is perfect,
right,
or that I agree with that person all the time.
Okay.
But when that person is willing to stand on a principle that at least not just the media, because you can, there's certain things that, you know, like give example, Republicans can always go and hide behind the media is all biased.
True.
I run back to my supporters. The media is distorting everything I say. That's not necessarily politically courageous.
No.
Just because one
just
side.
Accurate.
Right. Just because one side or the other. Yeah, it is accurate.
Yeah, thank you.
But just because one side or the other is angry at you doesn't mean you've been politically courageous.
Yeah.
Because you may be playing to a specific audience. Politically courageous is when you're not sure whether the left or the right will like where you stand.
Yeah.
But you do it anyway.
Or I'll add this to that because I think you're right on that. I think also politically courageous is willing to stand on a principle and know it's going to cost you something.
Yeah.
And I don't mean cost you as though half of the country is not going to like what you say. I mean literally going to cost you money, going to cost you influence. It's going to cost you, but it's your political principle, so therefore you stand regardless.
So who do you see right now that you would consider to be politically courageous?
Oh, gosh.
Is there anybody?
I you know what? I don't live in the political world the way you do because I avoid it at all costs because it drives me nuts.
Now, have you read Profiles in Courage? There's a couple examples of JFK in there.
Oh, okay. All right.
The guy was deeply flawed, as every president has been.
Exactly. By the way, and let me ask this. Maybe this is off subject. I will guarantee you it is.
We've chased a couple of rabbit trails in this.
I can tie this back into... to me, religion and politics and being courageous in both those areas.
I see what you mean by they could be
the
same
thing.
I see that.
Because people's politics, it can become their religion.
Yeah.
They will live and die on. And I understand that principle. I understand the idea because I would live and die on my faith. But I think one of the things that I look at, and I was in a rare political conversation on Twitter a couple weeks ago. Actually, I tell you what, it was after we posted the McConnell thing.
Yeah.
And this person came at me and said, how could you have someone like him on? I'm like, well, explain to me why you don't like him.
Right.
And of course, the real conversation became about Donald Trump. It wasn't because her problem was that she felt McConnell basically let Trump do whatever he wants, which
right.
I don't think is accurate, but nonetheless. I started listening to the things she would say on Twitter, and, you know, as we'd go back and forth. And the great thing about it was very cordial.
Yeah.
Which I can't do it any other way. And I try if I find myself getting too heated, I just won't send a tweet. She basically, it just started to become apparent to me that she is so passionate and so angry because her hope, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but it just seemed like she was putting a lot of pressure on the president of the United States, whoever it is, to help her, to be her savior.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we get the government is not intended to be our savior.
Yeah.
And I think you and I would say that as two people on the conservative side of the aisle. Like, no, the government needs to get out of the way.
Right.
But I think there's a lot of people that expect, because look, what does the president really do?
Right.
You know, we put so much, and I'm not saying they can't have influence. I'm saying at the end of the day, what do they do that really affects you for years to come? Tax break. Okay. That might affect you a little bit. Hiking taxes up, that might affect you a little bit. But is that going to affect you 20 years from now?
Yeah.
A faith will do that. The President of the United States, I don't think necessarily is going to do that. They could, I guess, by launching nuclear missiles. Yeah, that could probably affect us all. But I don't think that's really the evidence we have. But I think a lot of people I find, they put too much, and this is just a personal feeling, they put too much importance in, and I'm not saying we shouldn't vote our conscience. I'm not saying we shouldn't be politically active. I'm just saying that's not really going to blatantly affect your life.
So then,
in
how would
major
you
way,
how would you define political courage?
I think I did earlier with what I said is having the will to stand on your principles, to share your principles, to verbalize your principles,
yeah,
and to live your principles regardless of what's going to cost you. I would say the same about faith. I would say the same about politics. I would say the same about any belief system.
Yeah, I think it's kind of funny because I think politics and courage don't often go together. And I look back at, you know, I like to read
you know what? And sorry to interrupt.
No, it's okay.
I think they did for most of our politicians at the beginning.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was going to say.
Okay, my bad.
I was just going to say, I read a lot of biographies of founding fathers. And, you know,
I'm going to get you for Christmas.
What?
Do you have an Audible subscription?
I do not.
All right, I'm getting you an Audible subscription.
What is that?
It's books on tape, books on audio. Audio
okay,
books.
I love audio
because you all you've done is listen to podcasts.
I love podcasts.
So you would love audio. I just signed up last month. I don't read. I'm a bad reader because I get so distracted. I can listen to someone read their own book when they hit the right highs and the convictions there, and I love that.
That's
it's
awesome.
So good.
That's all. Well, I think if you take on balance, like right now, it's really popular to just kick the founding fathers in the shins. They were racist. They were this. They were that. They were all kinds of those things. They were deeply flawed human beings. But they set up a system that was damn near perfect in terms of its ability to fix itself.
Yeah. Or to not give any one person any particular amount of power for any too long.
And that took... I think a lot of people forget that regardless of what you feel... Like, we're trying to take the enlightenment of today and plaster it on the past, and then judge based on that.
Right.
Which you got to remember that our founding fathers were coming out of the Renaissance, which was the world waking up from the dark freaking ages. Mm-hmm. Women were burned at the stake because if they sassed their husband, they got accused of being a witch. I mean, that's what we were coming out of. That's the context of the times. And these millennials that are running around here talking about politically correct BS have no concept. And what we forget sometimes is that these guys signed a document that 3% of the country agreed with. Mm. And if they didn't win, they all got hung.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they get tried for treason.
Can you imagine today?
I tell you what, that's political courage. What Thomas Jefferson did.
Yes.
Because he was the one. No, who signed it? Was it Jefferson signed it big or Hancock?
It was Hancock.
Hancock signed it, yeah. But you know, he wanted the King of England to see his name first. That's political courage.
I want to be hung first.
That's political courage.
Because think about it.
Because we had no chance
of winning. No, if you had 80% of the crowd with you, is it hard to say if we lose, we'll get our heads chopped off?
Yes.
But if you have 3% of the crowd with you?
Yeah.
3%. What are the chances you succeed in that moment?
Yeah. By the way,
zero.
I'm thinking outside the box here. I'm just thinking I'm thinking out loud. Let's put it that way. The preamble to the Declaration of Independence, to me, in some sense, now it didn't happen for 100 years later,
right?
But because of that, that's where the flag had to be planted to dispel of slavery in our country.
I read a book, and I don't remember which one it was.
Yeah.
I've said this before, and you brought it up and you nailed it. Thomas Jefferson, it's my understanding that Thomas Jefferson and perhaps Madison, I don't remember exactly the details, but one or both of them were responsible for that.
Yeah.
They both loathed, even though they both participated. Both loathed slavery.
Yeah.
And Jefferson was smarter than pretty much anybody in the room 99% of the time.
Yeah.
And, I mean, these were guys that invented crap. Have you ever been to Jefferson's house in Monticello in Virginia?
Monticello, yeah. No.
It is, I swear to God, like every room is an invention. Yeah. Like the clock when you walk in that goes through the attic to the basement that he built himself. He built a chair for reading that was a rocking chair that had an arm that extended over, held the book, and then had glasses that were held in front of the book so he didn't have to get up and put his glasses on.
Talking about lazy.
I know.
Good gosh.
But the guy was like that inventive, right? He was smarter than pretty much everybody in the room. And they sort of slipped that past some of the people that were signing the Declaration of Independence. And I totally agree with you. And I can't remember which book it is, but I've read that yeah, there was an element of that in there that they were like, someday we'll deal with this.
Yeah.
Let's put it in here now so we're forced to deal with this someday. But right now we got to all be unified or we're all going
to
get hung.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm just thinking about that. That has to be – not to say you couldn't have dispelled with slavery without that, but as a political system that was launched in 1776, that had to be – That had to be the little verse.
Right.
Talk about it biblically. That had to be the little verse.
All men are created equal.
All men are created equal.
Yeah. And it was
even
just
those that only get, what was it, 3/5
right.
of a count as far as the House of Representatives.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But it was just a matter of convincing everybody that no matter what the color of our skin is, we're all 100%. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that I'm convinced that you're right. I mean, I am.
So political courage.
Professional courage.
One of the greatest compliments I ever got in my life, and you tend to remember, it's like my dad apologizing to me. It didn't happen often, didn't need to happen often, but when it happened, I remember him. Coach Pitino offered me 3 compliments in 3 years.
I love that you remember the number.
Well, because there were very
few. I know.
Few.
Well, no, that's emphatic. That's emphatic.
There were very few most of the time. And this is where I feel like I learned the importance of being coachable or being coached or being critiqued or being, criticized, which I don't mind the word criticized. Criticized is a wonderful word to me. And people say, well, constructive. Well, no, that's what criticism is. It's pointing out your flaws so you can fix them. Well, he did it constantly. That was how he coached, constantly pointing out. But then when he offered you that carrot of a compliment, you
ate
showered
it
with it. I mean, it was everything to you. And one, and
I'm gonna pet him and call him George.
I mean, because
compliment.
When he's yelling at you, you go back and dwell on that.
Yep.
Well, this is what he's saying to me now, but I know he believes this about me too, and you need that.
Yeah.
One of the things he said about me in 1997, and this was after I started playing and was playing well in the NCAA tournament, and he wasn't. And that's the other thing. Secondhand compliments are the best ones. When I don't tell you you're great, Leland, I tell your wife how great you are.
Mm-hmm.
And she winds up telling you. You know what Cameron said about you?
Yeah.
Those to me are much more valuable, and that's what this was. He was basically answering a question to a group of media about who's this walk-on you've got, or former walk-on that's all of a sudden in your starting lineup, but your 6th or 7th man off the bench. He said, well, the thing about Cameron is,
by the way, if you told my wife I was great, she wouldn't tell me. She'd be afraid my head would get big.
All right. Well, she knows you better not do. he said the thing about Cameron is Cameron's never afraid to fail.
That's wild.
Never told me that.
To your face.
And I'd never heard
that.
Who
did he tell it to?
Bunch of media.
Oh.
It was in the papers the next day.
Wow.
And so he had never told me that.
Right.
And I'd never heard that I never heard that before. Wow, being afraid to fail. And the funny thing now is
when you read that, what did you feel like?
Oh, I was ready to take on the world.
Yeah.
I felt, you know what I felt? I felt courageous.
That's awesome.
I did. I felt
that's
like
awesome.
I got guts.
That's awesome.
I got guts because basically I'm going out there and playing at my dream school and shooting 3-point shots, which is all I could ever do. That's courageous? No, that's not courageous. But his point was that I wasn't afraid to go out there and shoot. Even though I was all of a sudden gotten playing time when before I was the walk on and the end of the bench and was getting in the game with 2 minutes left when we're up 40.
Right.
The funny thing about that though is I don't see myself that way a lot.
Yeah.
And I find myself, and I think this is a good thing, I find myself trying to live up to that standard 20 years later.
That's pretty cool.
Am I living my life as though I'm not afraid to fail?
Yeah.
Which to me means I go overseas on mission trips occasionally. I will go because that's scary. What my brother's doing right now is scary.
Yeah.
He's going to the world's largest slum, which means there's a lot of crime. There are people there that differ highly from his belief system.
Yeah.
And of course, then you got planes. You know, it takes guts to do that.
Yeah.
It takes guts to do when you and I started this. Yeah, you and I talk, and we talk for a living.
Mm-hmm.
But this could and still might fail miserably.
Sure.
Let's try it. And I find myself put up against that wall of, hey, do you want to do television? It's a perfect example. Okay. I love doing TV. I love Channel 27 Election's given me a chance to do some, I guess, anchor work or commentary work on some of their basketball specials for UK basketball. I love doing that. But my favorite part is at the end after I've done it, especially if I feel like I've done a good job. And you don't get that privilege unless you have the guts to try and fail. Because I failed at many things in my life. The great thing is no one remembers the failures as much as I think they remember the successes. And I think that's the attitude we all have to have. I've got friends, and you're aware of them too, who have rearranged their lives in the last year and a half to 2 years because they felt like they were in ruts. And they're like, we've got to do something. And instead of just complaining that they were in ruts for the next 30 years of their life, they went out and they changed their lives.
Yeah.
And it wasn't easy. And it took some guts. But they love their life now. We're a year and a half removed from them making that big decision. And both of them are so much happier. And they're living their life the way they want to live it. And that's not easy to do, especially when you've got husbands and wives and kids and commitments and responsibilities to say, I'm going to change what I do.
Yeah.
How I do it. That's why there's so much, I think, self-help literature.
Right.
It's not that
people are hungry for it.
Well, but I think the thing, they're hungry to make the change themselves.
Right.
So we keep reading about the same thing over and over again, and we don't make the change.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying this to any kind of someone who's made all these changes in my life. I'm just as guilty. Mm-hmm. It's easier to read the same stuff over and over again and get motivated to do it. Because if you never do it, you got to go back and get motivated again. That's why there's so much literature out there. People are hungry for it because what they ultimately want is, I want to be the change. I want to make the change. I want to have the courage to do something different, to live my life in a different way that I've always felt convicted to live, whatever that is.
Right.
But most of the time we don't do it because we fail when it comes to the courage part of it. And I'm certainly guilty of that.
I used to work in an industry that you could say it was, we called it leadership development, but it was, a lot of it was self-help.
Yeah.
And I remember I could tell, I got to the point where I could spot, this is a self-help book. This is a leadership book.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I've got a lot of both on my shelves at home.
One of them is a lot of platitudes.
One of them is a lot of platitudes.
Right.
Because I'd have to read these books because, you know, I'd be the marketing director for these events and I'd be like, this one I wouldn't pay $10
this one's
for.
Garbage.
This one I'd pay $500 to see this.
This one
because it could change
something.
Your life.
Yeah.
Bedros Koulian. Have you heard of him?
No.
He does a podcast called The Empire Podcast. The guy's an immigrant from one of the Russian countries.
Okay.
His dad was like a former KGB guy. I'm trying to get him on the show, but he's really huge.
We've had Bill O'Reilly.
I know. We're working on it. Anyway, his dad was like actually a member of the KGB, but he wanted out.
Yeah.
And so in order to get out, he had to escape to America, gave up everything.
Oh.
He actually had a pretty good life there, and he gave up everything. So anyway, Bedros Koulian goes from... from that to picking garbage out of dumpsters to find food to eat, and then rose up to be one of the he's got one of the most successful fitness programs out there called Fit Body Bootcamp. Anyway, he does this whole thing about you only need one of the things you try to work.
Yep.
And his whole point is like, you know, you're going to try and you're going to fail, and you're going to try and you're going to fail, and you're going to try one. You just need one to work out. You know,
you think most people get discouraged by the times it doesn't work out and they stop trying?
Yeah, I think they do.
That sounds obvious now that I say it out loud, but I just wonder how much of
My wife sent me a picture the other day. She was in a restaurant and it said, it was a coaster, Ted's Montana Grill, and it was a John Wayne quote, and it said, courage is being scared to death and saddling up anyway.
Yeah.
And I posted that on Facebook, and it got a huge amount of likes and stuff because people like that kind of stuff. But it boils down courage to its definition. It's those moments when you don't know what the outcome's going to be.
Right.
It's not predetermined.
And maybe you're doing something out of your comfort zone, too.
Right. But one of the potential outcomes is so worth that you're willing to jump in and risk all the other outcomes. That's courage. That's the definition of courage. One of the outcomes is so worth it that the potential for every other outcome is worth going through and nailing it on the chance that you nail it. And it's being scared to death and saddling up anyway. And I'll tell you one quick story, real quick, and it's a defining moment in my career.
Okay.
I had been offered, I was just doing overnights at a radio station, and I was offered a gig full-time as a producer, technical guy, stuff that I felt like at that time was way over my head.
Yeah.
And I was terrified. and I was going to turn the job down because I thought I was going to fail. I was like, I can't do this technical stuff. I'm safe right here doing the overnights. I'm safe right here watching the computer. I don't have any responsibility. I don't want responsibility. I'm going to turn this down.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep delivering pizza during the week and then brag about working at a radio station on the weekend.
And that's a recipe for
success. Yeah, and I remember there was a curve in the road. And I was coming up on the curve, and I remember I'm going to turn this down, and something hit me, and it said, why are you turning this down?
Wait a minute, you were literally coming up on a curve, coming up on delivering pizza?
No, I was coming up on a curve going to work to tell my boss
okay,
I didn't want the job.
Literally a curve.
Yes,
okay, I got
curve
you.
In the road.
Okay, I got you.
Left-hand curve, 90-degree turn.
Gotcha, okay.
And I was coming up on that turn, and I remember saying to myself, I'm going to turn this down. And then I remember asking myself, why? And when I started being honest with myself, I realized the only reason, it's because I was afraid to fail.
Yeah.
And I went in and I took the job. And it literally, I can honestly say, I can track back all of the success that I've had in my career, which I ain't gonna lie, has been pretty good.
Yes.
To that moment.
You've done well.
In that moment. And I promised myself that moment, I said, I will never refuse to do something solely based on fear. Mm. Now, I'll just refuse to do things based on good reasons and also fear. But I will never choose to not do something purely based out of fear. And I've lived my life by that ever since.
Listeners are going to start hating me if I keep doing this. But look, if you go back to the people that taught me the lessons of my life, my mom and dad, Christ, and a guy named Rick Pitino.
Dude, there's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, that's part of your fascinating story.
Listen,
don't be ashamed of that.
One of the things he used to talk about all the time, and I love this, he would talk, and I'll save some of the others for another podcast. But one of the things he used to talk about all the time was that pressure is a good thing.
Yeah.
Well, and what he was talking about in our sense was the pressure the fans put on us to be great, the pressure the state puts on us, the university puts on, pressure the ESPN puts on us to live up to, you know, whatever. That's good, because here's what pressure does. Pressure causes fear.
Mm-hmm.
And fear forces you to prepare.
Yeah.
And I started thinking about, okay, so then by taking something, taking a chance with something that brings you fear, it also should, doesn't always, because I've had moments in my life where I just think I'm gonna be terrible at this, so I don't care. So I don't put any effort. I don't put any prep. I don't get ready for it. But the times I have been passable
in
whatever it was.
Right.
You know, maybe I haven't been great. Maybe I've been passable because I prepared, and that fear, it makes you prepare. So again, but it all starts with just saying yes.
Yeah.
Let's try it and not be afraid. If I am terrible at this, okay, then now I get a lesson in humility.
Yeah.
What's
wrong with that? Start over. So, but as we wrap it up, define courage then. We probably should have started with define courage.
I like that we're going to do it now.
Kind of like you're doing it at the end.
Yeah, I like that we're doing it. Well, we could also edit this at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
How can I do any better what John Wayne said?
Yeah.
I mean, that's I love that. I've never heard that before.
Yeah. Courage is being scared to death and saddling up anyway.
Courage isn't, to me, golly, I'm just going to sound like I'm piggybacking off him now. Courage isn't doing something with bravery, as though in the sense of,
yeah,
I don't fear
I'm not
this.
Afraid of anything. No, I'll kick all y'all's asses.
Because to have courage means you are afraid.
Right.
But you're willing to take that chance.
Right.
I mean, look, I don't believe anybody that signs up for the military, especially in this day and age, because you don't have the draft. These people are volunteers. I don't believe any of them are necessarily brave as much as they are courageous.
Yeah.
That I know they're afraid when they go over and they're in country, when they're in Iraq or Afghanistan or wherever it is we're stationed right now. I know that the first time they set foot on an aircraft carrier, I'm sure there's a measure of fear. But I'm also sure that fear has let them prepare, and there's a level of confidence too.
Yeah. One of our favorite episodes is with Matt Bradford, Corporal Matt Bradford.
Absolutely.
And remember, we asked him about what it was like in the moments when he was in combat.
Yeah.
And we asked Chris Peronto.
Yep.
Another one of our favorite episodes. Yep. What was it like when you were fighting in Benghazi? Every time I've talked to a military person who's been in combat, and I've asked them, what is it like? Because I'm fascinated by that. Because that, to me, is the ultimate fear, right?
Yeah.
You're literally going into a situation where there's one of two outcomes.
Yeah.
Either you win your freedom or you die. And then you don't know what happens. Right. And that's even scarier. You don't know what the outcome is going to be. What if I die and they lose?
Yeah.
If I die and they win and everything's okay and my family's fine, that's okay. I can live with that. But if I die and we still lose, right? So what's fascinating to me, I think about these things because my mind is weird.
I understand. Mine is the same way, but I just have to point this out. You said, if I die and my family's okay, I can live with that.
I can live with that.
You can't. That's the point.
No, you can't.
You're not going
to
live with that.
But the thing is, they always say you go back to your training. Yeah. And you just automatically go into that moment. Well, that brings us back to what you said about Coach Pitino. Yeah. When we're afraid, we prepare. When we prepare, we practice. When we practice, you fall back on the training in the moment when everything shifts and changes on the floor.
If you could have one more P there instead of that big long sentence, that'd be a great alliteration lesson.
P, 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 P?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we need, wait, what do we
need
did I say? Word,
we need, I don't know.
We
I
practice.
I thought it was going to be a P word and it wasn't.
We prepare.
We prepare. This is a great ending to the
that we got all the way here.
We're like, wait a minute. What did you say? Have I tuned you out? I had tuned you out. Pressure makes us prepare. And then we got to have something else there.
Well, there is a P one.
Perform.
Yeah, the perform. There we go. There's another one that's like, it's like practice. I don't know. There's another P one. But anyway, I think that it's hard to improve on that definition of courage, because I think courage is simply what courage to me is you're going into a situation where there are multiple outcomes, many of which are very, very bad, one of which is awesome and the best thing.
Sure.
And you're willing to face the potential that you might end up with one of those others purely based on the fact that you're in this, you know, you're just that's worth it to you.
Yeah.
So.
But also it's what you know. I mean, if we were talking to Chris Bronto, Chris told us, we asked him, what are you going to do next? He said, I want to go back overseas. I want to go back and do what I do. That's what I know. That's my job. Well, that means putting his life on the line after he knows how bad it can go.
Right.
So to me, that's all the more, again, back to courageous. Now, there's still some courage there. It's a lot more muscle memory, which is what, I mean, that's where you go falling back on your training.
Yeah.
But I would think, look, bottom line is, for those listening, take a leap.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, take a chance. Do something different.
Yeah.
And get out of the self-help.
And if he fails, do something else.
Do something else.
Just start over.
Or
just
do it better the next time.
Yeah. Try it again.
But the self-help books and all the platitudes and all the this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
Just, you've got to activate
right
at some point.
Yeah, I agree
just
with
soaking
that.
Up all this information that we're offering you today. At some point, we've got to say, okay, you know what? And you and I are the same way. We can't sit here and talk about this and not live it, or we look like frauds. So we've got to take chances.
Take action in fear.
Yeah.
Period.
What was the John Wayne quote again? We need to end on that.
Courage is being scared to death, but saddling up anyway.
Love that.
All right. The Disruption Zone. I'm Leland Conway. He's Cameron Mills.